Well, the bull stampede in the precious metals and domestic shares took a much-needed rest this week, just in time for the holiday weekend. Well, happy Good Friday, everyone. Welcome to GoldSeek.com Radio. Your host, Chris Waltzek, back with you on this big Easter weekend show. Harry S. Dent Jr., my first guest, says gold is more appealing than U.S. stocks on a valuation basis. He says, I would buy gold over shares any day of the week. And thanks to Fed tapering, funds have been directed into just that sector, gold. Our guest notes that it's the best inflation hedge available to investors, and a 10 to 20% gold investment in every investment portfolio is advisable. And I welcome back Bob Hoy, Senior Investment Strategist at Institutional Advisors. He says a new precious metals bull market is underway. He favors the gold and silver shares. He thinks U.S. weakness may indicate that a top is in place for the greenback. Good news for precious metals bulls. And the FOMC is losing control of the economy. If his work is right, they're backpedaling on rate hikes, maybe just one more quarter point this year. Then I open up the phone line for another listeners Q&A segment with two longtime listeners. First at bat, George is here. He's concerned by monetary policy makers' decisions, particularly at the BOJ and the EU, and you can listen in on his comments. And John from sunny California calls in with another interesting question. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with a market weather recap. Partly cloudy skies appeared over the New York COMEX exchange amid U.S. dollar weakness this week. No market can go straight up without a pause, and pause it did on dollar strength. By Friday's closing bell, the elemental was off just $40 for the week, about 3%, ending still, though, well above that 1,200 mark at 1,216 an ounce. Silver finished at 1520, off just 4%, about 60 cents. The XAU gold and silver index held up, though, pretty well relative. Hanging on to 67.50, off only 4 points. And West Texas Intermediate crude gave back 4%, just $1.50, ending just shy of $40 a barrel. The top story impacting the markets, the FOMC rate decision on Wednesday. Policymakers held the benchmark overnight lending rate steady, just as we all anticipated, at 0.5%. Nevertheless, officials offered forward guidance that seemed to imply further rate hikes ahead, but it seems a bit like more of that Fed jawboning. If you look at the Fed funds futures, we shouldn't see anything more than a quarter point rate hike this year, maybe up to 0.75%. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President James Bullard said on Thursday that he thinks the next rate hike may not be far off, but I have to differ with him. The Fed funds rates, once again, the Fed funds futures say otherwise, and people put their money where their mouth is. Plus, the Labor Department indicated applications for unemployment benefits increased less than expected, which helped the U.S. dollar a bit, but it's still well below support. Moving on, big investors are turning to gold, including billionaire entrepreneur Mark Cuban, buying bullish options on the gold ETF. In addition, Dave Cullum, a chemistry professor at Cornell University, has been a fan of the metal for 15 years. He recently added to his holdings of physical gold, noting global tensions and negative interest rates. Sounds like pretty good advice to me. Precious metals bottom line. The metals finally had a setback after 2 months of solid advances. Who cares? Gold has support at $1,200 and $1,150, while silver needs to hold solidly onto that $15 point next week if support holds, and that's what we're hoping for. I expect silver to rocket higher to $18 and then onwards and upwards to 2021. Gold to blast off the pad towards $14, $1,500 as soon as this year. This is not a forecast, merely an opinion, assuming that the axioms listed above hold next week. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, well, partly cloudy weather appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. The bull stampede halted after 5 solid weeks on sluggish economic activity. By Friday's closing bell, the Dow was off just about 0.5% at 17,515, down 86 points, while the S&P 500 ended at 2049, off just 14, a little more than 0.5%, and the NASDAQ ended down 22 at 4773. Bottom line on Wall Street, Street? Well, market volatility as viewed by our CBOT VIX and VVIX continues to decline, showing no signs of a bottom. And that, of course, is a positive for shares. As mentioned in the last report, the fear and greed index had swung way too far into the greedy side. So we saw a pullback this week and things have normalized. I'd like to see shares consolidate for a few weeks and then maybe make a run to new bull market highs. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with our top guests and the Q&A segment. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Harry S. Dent Jr., editor of the free newsletter Survive and Prosper, H.S. Dent Forecast newsletter as well. He offers current economic analysis of the financial market trends, also author of several bestsellers. Welcome back, Harry S. Dent Jr.
Well, nice to be back, Chris.
You know, a lot of volatility in the markets. 2016 has been, I think we've seen some sea change events. The stock market, not uncommon to see 1,500, almost 2,000 point swings, and the Dow Jones Industrials. We haven't seen anything like that since 2008, 2009. Let's start off with U.S. shares. Give us your input, please.
What most important has happened, Chris, is the market lost momentum after the Fed tapered in late 2014. The market's basically gone sideways since then. And up into May of 2015, the market was just barely making new highs instead of making stronger new highs as it had done for years in this rally with all the stimulus behind it. Now, since May, every time the market goes down, like those 2,000 points you're talking about, you know, it'll go down 10% or 15% or whatever, but it'll bounce back fiercer than ever. But every rally since then has not been able to make a new high for the first time. So to me, this bubble is over and the market's trying to make a new high here. I think it'll fail. I think we've seen the best of this rally. We may see a little higher, but I think not much more. And I think the next downturn in the markets will be more serious than the ones we saw late last year and early this year. And by the summer, people are going to realize this bubble is over and that we're not going into a correction in a bull market, but we're going into a bear market that's going to last several years. But we're going to see the worst of it by late 2017. So I think we are starting a serious crash. And just like in 2007 and 8, it took many months of the market only going down 10 or 15% and then rallying and trying to make new highs. And then it all fell apart. in just a few months between June and November of 2008. I think this is the last chance for investors. You know, we warned in a lot of other investments, commodities and gold way back, and people thought that wasn't a real top. Well, everybody knows commodities have long topped, and gold is in a bear market, even though it's rallying now in a deserved rally. This time where we are leveraging the biggest debt and financial asset bubble in modern history, and it's just starting. And people still don't get that, you know, this is a bubble that's got to burst, and this is not a correction. This is not a correction. I cannot say that more times.
Firstly, on U.S. shares, a bubble, what it's really doing is reeling in the retail investors for a shellacking, firstly, and then we'll get to a couple of the other important ones, i.e. leverage, as well as precious metals. You know, I'm seeing signs of your U.S. shares comments, that whole ontology. We see that unfolding when you look individual. Each week, you know, many of us put out candidates for our subscribers, and I comb through a list of, you know, just the top companies with the best fundamentals, but even many of those have not recovered the way that the indices have recovered. That, to me, is a bearish, contrarian indication that says, wait a minute, are the powers that be pumping up these indexes, or is it just the easiest way for the big money, you know, to participate in the rally and boost their quarterly end-of-quarter profits, make investors and hedge fund managers look a little better? That's the first thing. So, you know what? I'm on board with you. I think this could be the top, especially when you look at price-to-earnings ratios, as we've seen across the board in the CAPE ratios. Many of these are unsustainable at any profit level. I'd like to move on, though, to the next topic, and that's leverage. I'd like your thoughts on just what the implications of this could be, because this is a genie that's been let out of the bottle that I only think maybe 1 in 10 financial analysts and economists really has their mind wrapped around the idea of leverage. And you know, you can go into the FX market, and you can get 40-1, 100-1 leverage on just $1 or $100. Give us an idea of what this means for the U.S. and global economies.
Well, you know, Chris, I mean, there's still $550 trillion, that's not a typo, $1 trillion in credit default swaps and derivatives around the world. A lot of them held and backed by major banks. Deutsche Bank is the worst, and people would think German banks are sound. J.P. Morgan is the second worst, and then many, many more. There's two, we've gone, debt in the world has gone from like $180 trillion total around the world to $250 now. So after the last correction, instead of deleveraging debt and kicking back and getting more sound, all this stimulus, all this low interest rate, zero interest rate policy has just encouraged more borrowing, now especially in emerging countries who are in the most trouble and going down the fastest because of the crash in commodity prices, which was caused by China's slowdown. We have more leverage than ever. And again, with zero interest rates, like you said, I mean, hedge funds, investors in all so many ways can now leverage up so cheaply that we basically just have a casino economy. Banks aren't taking money and lending it out, and consumers aren't borrowing money that much, or businesses, because they all overborrowed in the boom and in the bubble into 2007. So this theory that, oh, if the Fed pumps money in the economy, it'll get lent and spent, is just not happening. It's just going into speculation, and speculation causes bigger bubbles, which we have bigger bubbles in a lot of the state, bigger bubbles and definitely bigger bubbles in real estate around the world, and massive stock bubbles everywhere that are just going to have to burst. There's no way for this to end. Bubbles don't correct. They burst. They build up exponentially until they can't go any farther, and they don't come down slowly. They crash. People just don't get this. And all I do is go on media, and everybody I debate says, well, Harry, this isn't a bubble because it's not as bad as the tech bubble, but price-earning ratios aren't 44. They've never been 44 in history except for one time in the most perfect economy in the 90s with falling inflation, strong technology growth and productivity, the strongest years of spending for the baby boom, and a positive geopolitical cycle where nothing, absolutely nothing went wrong in the world after the fall of Berlin Wall. This is not that era. So price earnings ratios now, cyclically adjusted by Shiller, the best way to do it, average earnings, not peak earnings, are at 27, as high as they've been in any time in six other bubble and major bull market peaks, except the early 2000 bubble was higher and the 1929 bubble was higher. The market is very overvalued, especially when you take into account the fact that the world simply is. I mean, where is there not civil wars? You know, where is there not problems in the world? Where is there not terrorism, as this morning again? And the stock market's, you know, down a teeny bit after another major terrorist attack in Europe. What is wrong with this market? It is a market on crack. It is delusional, and it's being fed by free money and speculation, and it is going to go down so hard when it goes down, people aren't going to believe it. That's the only way this can be resolved. There's no other way out of this. 70% in the next 2 years, Chris. The S&P and Dow, the major U.S. stock market.
You do realize the implications of a move like that.
Yeah. You think people are pissed off now and voting for Trump and Sanders. Wait until that happens.
But what about the Federal Reserve and all of our wonderful policymakers? Surely they have a bag of tricks in store for this.
Yeah, they've had a bag of tricks for 6 years, 7 years now. Looks where it's gotten us. A bigger bubble is going to burst. This is going to be the biggest single failure of monetary policy since John Law in 1720 in the Mississippi and South Seas bubbles, the greatest stock crashes of their time in Europe, because central governments had high debts and basically sold off phony assets like the Mississippi swampland and the South Seas trading company to the public, financed by low interest rates by a Federal Reserve-like bank back then, a central bank. This is what central banks do. They try to make everything fine. They keep pumping up the economy. They keep lowering interest rates. They keep inducing speculation until the bubble blows. And this is not going to go down well for central banks. We may not have any central banks after this. They will lose so much credibility.
No, it's a powerful statement. And if I could parallel your thoughts for a moment, you know, there really are some interesting similarities. If you do look at the Mississippi scheme, they sent hundreds and hundreds of people in these rickety boats to Louisiana, promising them the promised land. And it was marsh and swampland. As we all know, we have the bayou. What we currently have, I think you might agree, is really backed by nothing. At least you had the Mississippi property. No one could give it away fast enough. The King of France eventually sold it to the United States for pennies on the dollar simply because they didn't want it on their books anymore. I think that the U.S. could be facing something even worse, but you know they're going to go down fighting. So give us an idea of how that plays out.
The one government that is the most restricted right now is the U.S. Fed, because we tapered, stopped, you know, printing free money. And Japan kept doing it more and stepped it up three times. Europe's doing it again strongly. It's easier for them to keep upping the ante, but it's going to be a major decision for the Fed after tapering number one and then number two, raising short-term rates just that quarter of a point, to turn around and say, oops, we were wrong, we're not in a sustainable recovery, and we have to start lowering rates again, go to negative interest rates, and have to start QE again. That is going to be a huge turnaround. And so they're not going to do that too abruptly. And I think by time the U.S. Fed reacts, I think by the summer, and especially by the end of this year, it's going to be obvious we're in a recession. It's going to be obvious that Italy is failing, Greece is failing again, Southern Europe. And then, yes, at some point, not only is all central banks going to try to up the ante, but look, they've already done it. Japan has stimulated QE since early 2013 now for 3 years, three times the rate we did at our peak, or Europe and the other thing, and they're back in recession. And their stock market's going down after going up. This stuff doesn't work at a point. These central banks are going to keep fighting. They have no other choice. As soon as they stop these stimulus policies, we'll go down even faster. And they know that. But they are going to go down anyway. They're trying to keep a bubble. Their solution to the bubble bursting is to just keep pumping up the bubble, because you can't pump up lending when everybody's too much in debt. And you can't grow when businesses have already overexpanded jobs and capacity. There's no way to get out of this except for keep pumping up the bubble and just hoping it doesn't burst while you're still in office as a Federal Reserve chairman or as a president or a premier of a country. That's all everybody's just doing, is trying to push this thing to the next administration in every country, because nobody wants the Great Depression on their watch. And it is coming. There is no way to avoid this.
I can understand now why you might be a little bit pessimistic on the commodity sector under such a scenario. But relative to paper assets, even though the actual dollar price of the metals could decline during a crash, if that comes to pass, the only refuge that might have any value at all relative to paper assets, which could still be declining, but relative would be precious metals.
Maybe down the road, but not here. I mean, here's the good news about commodities. They've already been demolished. Commodities are already in a depression. Iron ore and copper and all the key industrial commodities are down 70-80% already. So they don't have as much downside. Certainly, they're not going to like the world falling into a deeper downturn. But they've already been demolished, and precious metals have been hit pretty darn bad. The safe haven, Chris, and I've had to say this over and over again, and nobody gets it. The only asset in the last crash and since that has gone up in value has been U.S. dollar versus other currencies and the highest quality sovereign bonds in the best countries, you know, U.S., Germany, whatever. That's been it. I mean, when you have a bubble burst, all financial assets have been inflated by too much debt and too much speculation, all of them, even most bonds and certainly junk bonds. So everything goes down. And I'm not a fan of the U.S. dollar forever. I'm just saying in the early stages of this crisis, to debate people like Peter Schiff all the time who say, the dollar's falling, the dollar's crashing. Peter, the dollar has been nothing but up since the beginning of this crisis in early 2008. It was up the most when the crisis was at its worst in the second half of 2008. And even in the recovery with unprecedented money printing, the dollar's been more up than down, and it's up 40% off of its lows in early 2008. The dollar has been the safe haven, and gold and silver have held up better than most commodities, but they're still down. Gold's still down, I don't know, 40% off its highs or something like that recently. And I've been calling for months that gold was due for a major counter rally, that it had gotten oversold and overly pessimistic, and it's rallying here. But I'm telling you, I think the gold doesn't make it much past 1400 before it turns down. And I think my forecast is gold's going to be at $700 by mid to late 2017. And that might be a long-term bottom. Because, again, I think gold's going to hold up better than other commodities.
Let me throw one proviso in here before we continue with this and get too negative. If you ever take a look at the gold-to-ruble ratio or ruble-to-gold ratio, the same thing was occurring in Russia until the oil crisis. And then you saw gold make an about-face and blast higher by 100% in just over 2.5 months' time. So there are times when, you know, King Canute can't command the tides, and we can't always know the future when it comes to markets. That's why I think you'd agree a good solid 10, 15, or 20% precious metals portfolio ratio is always a good idea.
Gold is the single best inflation hedge, and you look at history, our history has been mostly inflationary. Deflationary periods like the 30s are rare, and I think we're entering another one. So I would only be more skittish in a time like that. You know, but if gold went down, and when I'm using the 700, I use 7 to 750, but that is where gold corrected in 2008. And it went down 33% before it bubbled up with all the money printing at first. So that is the natural. At that level, I would consider adding gold to my portfolio because that could be a bottom, although I think down the road it could go lower. But that's when gold at least erases most of its bubble. And it was a bubble, by the way. Gold bubbled like everything else. It went up 8 times in 10 years. That's a bubble.
You say gold loves an inflationary environment. Yes, we had seen some signs of deflation. However, you do have to recognize, I'm sure you'd have to agree on a weekly basis, the greenback has broken 100% of its support levels, might be entering a downtrend. That's number one. Number two, we've got the U.S. Fed, rumors, hints, innuendo, that we may actually see negative interest rates, and it looks like there will be at most one or two more quarter point rate hikes.
Chris, you did not have to worry about rate hikes. Mark my words on this. And if it happens, there might be one more. The economy is going to be so bad by the end of this year, there's not going to ever be talk of a rate hike ever again.
The only move they have in the coach's playbook, first page in the book, is inflate, inflate, inflate under that scenario.
Japan has, again, done QE at 3 times the rate that we ever did. continued and gone to negative interest rates in recent months. And guess what? Its stock market's down. Guess what? Its economy's in recession. It's her debt.
I would just like to accentuate your points here and say maybe there's some tangents we haven't quite investigated fully yet. So, for instance, I'm with you, BOJ. But let's not also forget we have several European individual countries, not to mention the EU, all now issuing negative interest rates. You know, the biggest trend right now in Europe, as well as Japan, is buying fortified home safes and banks because people don't want to put their money in the bank because you lose money. Under those scenarios, if we see something similar in the United States, gold, which hasn't corrected in the terms of many other currencies, actually remains in an uptrend, might be the best safe haven because you can't lose interest on gold.
I'm 100% on this, and gold correlates incredibly well with inflation, and we're seeing nothing but lower inflation and deflation ultimately. Second, if you go all the way back to 1700s and adjust gold for inflation or real estate, for that matter, gold does not appreciate. It is an inflation hedge, and commodities tend to be inflation hedge, and we're heading into a deflation area. If I thought we were heading into an inflationary era, yes, I'd buy gold. If I was in the Russian ruble, yes, I'd buy gold because, yeah, the ruble collapses. Of course, gold's going to go up in rubles. The U.S. dollar is not collapsing. You've been in a 103 to 93 to 100 range now for months, and if it breaks off the top of that, it's going to go up to 120 at least. When the dollar goes to 120, then I would consider buying gold because I think the dollar would have pretty much run its course, and then I'll no longer be bullish on the U.S. dollar. But I am bullish on the U.S. dollar, especially in the early stage of this crisis. And the U.S. dollar keeps going up, gold's going to keep going down.
You know, that's what makes a market, right? I mean, we have to have bulls, we have to have bears. I mean, I can't see how you would prefer to add U.S. shares to your portfolio over a beaten down asset class like the precious metals.
Any day of the week right now, I'd take commodities over stocks, but I just don't like any of them.
But on a purely valuation basis, gold is superior to shares. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. I again, got to buy something, a risk asset. I would buy gold over U.S. stocks any day of the week.
Harry S. Dent Jr., tell folks more about H.S. Dent Forecast Newsletter, your ETF, as well as Survive and Prosper.
Simplest thing, you go to harrydent.com. We will send you our latest book for free. You just pay $4.95 for shipping. And we have a free daily newsletter. It's actually been changed to Economy and Markets. And we can put, all you do is put your email address in. You're on our free newsletter. We have other newsletters, but to get to know us, it's a great newsletter with high content and no risk, no money, nothing. Just put your email in, you're done. HarryDent.com.
All right, we appreciate your thoughts. We'll look forward to hearing more of those thoughts in 2016. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hoy.
Hi, Chris.
A lot of interesting activity in the markets lately, and that's what our aficionados would like to hear about. Tell us what you see happening.
The U.S. dollar started to weaken a couple of weeks ago. It just looked tentative that, hey, it looked like it was trying to trend down, and indeed it has. This is also at a time when you have seasonal strength in base metals. This could run a little further. It's been a terrific rally out of the troubled times of December, January. And it's also a seasonal favorable for crude oil. And it has had a good run. It's almost up to $40 here today. So the strength in these industrial commodities, can continue for some weeks yet, perhaps through into April, well into April. The decline in the U.S. dollar, that's interesting as well, because when crude crashed down to the first crash down to January 2015, the dollar just soared. It started that summer and broke out, and we thought that while it was overbought then, it could go to, I think you used the term like super overbought, which it did a year ago. So now it's been in a trading range, da-da-da-da-da-da, but now it seems to be heading down, I think helped by a seasonal move in commodities. Also, Yellen, with her words yesterday, really revealed that they don't know what is going on. Their theories are not working, that an economy needs managing and can be managed, and then their practices of, credit here, credit there. I think the Fed has been easy ever since it opened the doors in 1914. So base metals and precious metals are acting well. The other one that was interesting here is in the last week, until a week ago, the gold-silver ratio was going up as gold was outperforming silver, or silver was declining relative to gold, and that's a sign of possible concerns in the credit markets. Well, this, I guess it got overdone at around 84 on the gold-silver ratio, and now it's been coming back, which is a positive for not just the gold and silver, because in a rally for silver and gold, if it's a good rally, silver will outperform gold. So things look positive on that side, but we should look at, just how much further they can go. As I say, the seasonals for the metals are good for some weeks yet, and the seasonals for crude oil perhaps right through April and into May. So, and then this is also the time on previous years we've called it the silly season, where in March, April, but that may sound like we're condemning it, but let's just call it the sensational season when things like this can happen. So our work will be to determine when these things get overbought, because this is how you trade them from overbought to oversold, or actually from oversold in December. So these rallies are good, but there's a few weeks left in them. On the credit market side, spreads have been narrowing ever since January. And this is the one, you recall, Chris, that last June credit spreads reversed from narrowing to widening. And by late July, we were looking for the trend on the chart to break out. And it did, and then that pushed off the whole liquidity problem down into, a couple of months ago. So so everything's sort of positive. Spreads have been narrowing. Yield curve on the Treasury curve, it is now turning to be helpful for the banks. But, you know, you take a look at things, Chris, with the bank and the financial sector banks, BKX, they've had a modest rally, but they have been a weak group, and they're only rallying weekly. The other one within that side has been the biotechs, IBB, where it had been particularly weak, and the rally was hardly anything, and now it's weak. So weak sectors did not respond well, and in the case of IBB, are weak again. So it's not an overall healthy stock market. We're looking at this as just a rally within a time that we're probably in a cyclical bear market for the big stock market. And we're probably, as we talked about in January, the start of a cyclical bull market in precious metals. And we prefer the gold stocks within that.
I think one of the best calls in my newsletter for years, 20s on oil, I said this is the time to buy long-term equity, you know, leaps on the 2x leveraged oil ETF. We love silver, and I think we're going to back and fill for 12 to 24 months here as the political drama plays out. And that would set the floor for the next big, as you're referring to it, cyclical market in the precious metals. Cautiously increase exposure on the metals, on the energy sector, especially the beaten down energy stocks like Sunoco, which was a favorite of ours for almost 10 years.
Crude oil, all those tankers going around full of crude oil. One of my private concerns is that it would be all that displacement would raise the level of the oceans.
Why don't you give us your overview of the Fed's decision?
There is no point watching anything the Fed does or says, because one, their theory has always been wrong, that an economy needs management. Absolutely wrong. The other thing that is unsupportable is that they assume a concept of a national economy. Hey, there is no such thing as one discrete national economy. When it comes to the credit markets, they're all tied together, and whether you are in London, Zurich, New York, or Beijing, or Shanghai, it's all one market. So then their notion that they have a national economy to experiment with is just plain wrong. And then the other one that is, we call a primitive syllogism, is that they have looked at business history, and what do you see on every business cycle? You get a business expansion, and guess what? Businessmen borrow more money, so you then have an expansion of credit. Then look at this and say, oh, credit expansion causes business expansion. Well, we all know what roosters think about sunrises. They're so proud, they crow in the morning, and gee whiz, the sun comes up. Now, that's another way of phrasing it, Chris, is that correlation is causation. So the two foundations of central bank intervention, one, a national economy does not exist. Two, the idea that credit stimulation pushes business is a primitive syllogism, and it's absolute nonsense. And somewhere, somebody serious has got to keep hammering away at this. But you know, Chris, I think it'll be the common sense on whenever we get the next recession. They're going to look at that, and they're going to look at the amount of taxpayer money that the central bankers have risked, and they're going to say, hey, your theories aren't working. So you have now, I just made a note on one, a possible coup in China. Somebody doesn't like somebody at the top. You've got uprisings in Brazil against the federal government there. You've got similar things going on in Europe. And then in the United States, you've got the political phenomenon of Donald Trump. So reform of excessive government is required. And in the case of the United States, that before you can reform general politics, you have to reform what should have been the party of opposition, which was the Republican Party. And so you have to reform the Republican Party. Now, maybe Trump may not be the exact right guy to do the reform, but he's sure moving it along lately. I look at it as not so much as a supporter, but as a student of political history. This is very dynamic stuff going on, and he's even really annoying the Republican establishment. They would sooner vote.
If we move forward on the Fed Funds futures contracts at the CME, you'll notice that there are dead even odds. It is a coin toss, okay, between 0.50, our current 50% benchmark overnight lending rate, interest rate, and a 75 basis points. It's dead even, and that would be for the month, the FOMC meeting in November. So if we fast forward to September and November, investors are placing their money, their bets, their odds in the futures market, that there is a really solid chance that we will see just one more rate hike.
That future on the Fed's rate is a non sequitur spelt in capital letters. The history of great volatility in the financial markets, like when you're in financial asset inflation, the great bubbles all the way back to, well, the first one was 1720, but after the bubble in 1825, that's, of course, England was the senior economy, and the Bank of England was the senior central bank. It could change the discount rate due to market forces. Now, the record is, on every great bubble, the senior central bank, in adjusting their administered rate, is months, 6-7 months, behind the changes in market rates of interest. And, for example, in 1929, the T-bill rate started going down after April 29. And it wasn't until October when the Fed cut its discount rate. So at any rate, and then off the other way going around, on the positive business sides, when you get a cyclical recovery, of course, interest rates are going to go up, and market rates of interest go up, and then the Fed has followed. So there's no point anyone looking forward and trying to guess what the Fed's going to do in November, because it doesn't matter, because the Fed will be following what's going on in market rates of interest. And at the moment, the last 5-6 weeks here, you've had a terrific decline in junk bond yields, narrowing of credit spreads. This is all positive stuff, and it's likely to go on for a while. But somewhere, lower grade yields, junk yields, high yields will start to go up again. And at some point, the Fed will follow and raise interest rates. but not until market rates have been up for trending up for a number of months and all that sort of stuff. These guys really don't know what they're doing. So there's no point guessing what they think they're doing because they will be following market forces eventually anyways.
Incidentally, I just forwarded to your email address this remarkable book, The Man Who Loved Only Numbers, The Story of Paul Erdős, that Hungarian mathematician with Asperger's. Reading is like music. Everyone has their own tastes. But the reason why I think this appeals to everyone I've sent to, the reason why it transcends so many people's interest, it really covers this amazing interplay between all these great minds. And I'll make it brief. Hungary, a hotbed of mathematical and physics genius, Edward Teller, Paul Erdős, John von Neumann. The interplay in their personal and professional lives, it's almost as though you're in the room while these people are solving the atom bomb and they're, you know, making huge breakthroughs in prime number theory and all of this. And it's written for the lay person, but also for the more technically inclined. And it's free. If you just send me an email, anyone who's listening, I'll fire it over to you just because I want you to enjoy this. And of course, if you haven't read The Man Who Knew Infinity, well, they just made a movie with Jeremy Irons on that one. Of course, that's the story of Ramanujan. Paul Erdős loved to rate the mathematical minds of his time. He rated himself only a 25 out of 100, which I think is an understatement. But he rated Ramanujan, who he knew quite well and corresponded with, a 100 out of a 100. Yeah, that gives you an idea. Could you imagine Einstein saying that you're brilliant? I mean, that's it's really quite a statement. Anything we haven't covered today, Bob?
I think we got it. It's always fun to talk with you, Chris.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. And let's do it again.
Indeed. Anytime.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of
of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Opening up the phone lines for listeners' Q&A. First up, longtime listener George.
I want to ask a question, I think. If 7 years of 0% interest rate policy, Q1, QE2, Operation Twist, then QE3, which the pundits originally said were emergency temporary measures, not debt monetization, failed to produce an economic expansion, and only created malinvestments and bubbles. Why would further extreme adjustments in monetary policy producing negative interest rates and outright monetization of ETFs and other instruments help growth and capital investment? This is being tested in Europe and Japan, so we will see. I just do not understand why these pseudo-Keynesians think the extension of failed monetary policies and central bank intervention that is unprecedented in history will work. Thank you very much.
Hi, George. You know, I'm sure you understand that policymakers have simply run out of gimmicks. They seem to be so desperate just to keep the global economic engine running that debt monetization and negative interest rates, it's pretty much a last resort. To keep this house of cards from imploding, negative rates forces malinvestments, pushing the money into paper assets with virtually no return or yield, and that pursuit of risky capital gains is virtually all there is. It punishes savers, and the whole idea here is based, I think, on the economic fallacy that if you plaster over the cracks in the foundation with these monetary schemes, eventually the structure will right itself. But what I think they're starting to recognize just is that the whole foundation has a terminal fault. It's not just vertical, it's horizontal, and it cannot be repaired with these operations. Our industrial base, it's lost. It's not going to be rebuilt over years, maybe even decades. The middle class has been decimated. It was the backbone of society. That took generations to build. It would take generations to rebuild. And then, of course, our education system, it's failed to prepare us for today's incredibly competitive global workplace. So, unfortunately, it looks as though individuals, families, and even our municipalities locally must fend for themselves against an increasingly hostile economic environment. Now, look, okay, I know that many of my listeners are faring very well. They have good, solid, diversified portfolios, and I think that's really what you have to do here. Good, solid U.S. stock market base plus bonds plus precious metals and several other sectors takes care of the gyrations in any individual market, and over time, you'll have a steady income stream to help your retirement, and it will, for the most part, there's just no better free lunch, as they say, than diversification.
Hey, Chris. Just a little commentary on Armstrong's comment about the stock market, how it's not in a bubble because there's no retail participation. Well, did Mr. Armstrong ever consider that maybe the baby boomer generation, after having been burned twice by the stock market, most of them have migrated to the bond market, in particular bond mutual funds, hence the huge bubble in the bond market, of course, precipitated by the Federal Reserve and other central banks. This time, it really is different. Price-earnings ratios are off the charts. Most of the trades are being conducted by robo-traders, and those algos will turn a dime once they're unable to stop the inevitable collapse of stock prices. Instead of buying the dips, they'll be selling the rips. as David Stockman puts it. So anyway, Armstrong's an interesting character, but I don't think he's got this one quite right. But he, I think he's missing the forest for the trees. It'll be interesting to see how this all turns out. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
On to the next caller. Well, longtime listener John. He disagrees with one of our favorite guests, whose indicators are saying higher prices are likely for U.S. shares. Well, you know, hi, John. You know, I think Mr. Armstrong's body of work is very impressive, and I really agree with both of you. From a technical vantage point, stocks clearly could still break out to new highs and run for another year or two. However, I also agree with your thoughts that shares are, on a fundamental basis, overvalued. I mean, PEs are out of control, especially in the tech sector. Remember the old market axiom, though? Stocks can remain irrational longer than we can maintain our margin. So I think the best bet, again, as I mentioned with our last caller, is solid diversification. You can, if you're worried about stocks, you can either hedge that or you can decrease exposure in your diversified portfolio, increase the weighting in bonds and precious metals if you like. That, of course, is your call. I can't give out investment advice, just some thoughts. If a downtrend in shares does unfold on a monthly chart, I would consider, of course, some hedging, and you might think of that as some put insurance on the indexes. That might be another way for the professional investor to sleep a little better at night with a very, very small percentage of their portfolio. We appreciate your calls. Remember, you can call in at any time to our hotline. It's not toll-free anymore, but we'd still like to hear from you. Please jot down 1-206-66-65-370 on a posted pad, or you can plug it right into your phone if you'd like for GoldSeek. That's 1-206-66-65-370. That's our hotline, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We appreciate your calls and your comments. More GoldSeek Radio after these messages. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold.
gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. It's a very interesting, very dangerous, very unpredictable time in the financial markets around the world at this moment in time. In fact, it's been that way for a long time, but now it's becoming a bit more clear if you know where to look. People often say follow the money to get to the root of a situation. Right now, to get to the root of the economy, you want to follow the gold. A story this week by Reese Morgan from Hedge Fund Insiders discussed how one of the most successful hedge fund managers of the past 25 years, Stan Druckenmiller, now has 30% of his portfolio in the Spider Gold Trust. Over the past 25 years, the annualized rate of return for his firm was 30%. According to the filings reported in the article, his family office has $292 million out of $977 million in assets invested in gold. Why such a large percentage? Clues might be inferred from some of his recent comments, which include an appearance at the annual Deal Book Conference in November of 2015, where he discussed central bank policy, indicating the U.S. Federal Reserve did a great job keeping the economy afloat back in 2008 and 2009. But he can't understand why emergency financial measures are still in effect 7 years after the fact. He believes years of easy money policy have caused all kinds of unusual behavior, as in corporations borrowing at ultra-low rates to buy back stock valued at all-time highs. Unnecessary monetary policy, coupled with unusual risk-taking, he believes, will result in the chickens coming home to roost. Those chickens are, without a doubt, coming home to roost. But we still haven't had the all-out easy money policies on the consumer side of the equation that big business and big banking has had access to the past 7 years. Emergency financial measures are still in place because the financial emergency of 2008 and 2009 never ended. There are many more examples of large, sophisticated investors taking large positions in gold and silver. The wealth transfer from paper assets to tangible assets is soon to be upon us. You can see the future from this vantage point right here, right now. For those of us that have been in these trenches for a long, long time, we have been able to see this for quite some time. It's only that right now, the larger players in the financial equation are starting to see this as well. Or, should I say, are starting to act upon it. And that action is about to change everything. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.